As an organisation, we're not just here to continue to deliver the status quo.
Hello and welcome to the Vitalising Purpose podcast with today's guest, Naomi Holston, and me, Jamie Veitch. Naomi is the Chief Executive of Catch22, and when we recorded this podcast, she'd been in that role for just over 6 months after a 21-year career at the organisation, during which she'd done pretty much every role. That gave her valuable insights as a leader, as a manager, and Naomi talks about fostering an intentional culture in this episode, which includes honest tips about accountability, transparency, culture, and leadership, which anyone running a social enterprise, or indeed running a charity, running a purpose-driven organisation, will find valuable. Naomi talks too about changing ways of working and about making the impossible possible. We've seen how that was possible in the pandemic, but it shouldn't be only in times of crisis that we do that. There's plenty to chew on in this episode about collaboration, about partnership, and about putting a people-centred culture at the heart of what you do in public service delivery. And there's even an amazing story about the Rolling Stones. So let's hear from Naomi now. Naomi, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast today. Can you start by telling us a little bit about Catch22? What is the organisation?
Hi, Jamie. Thanks for having me. So Catch22 is a social business. It's a not-for-profit business with a social mission. We've been around for about 200 years, and we design and deliver services that build resilience and aspiration in people and communities. Kind of consider ourselves a business with the heart of a charity and a bit of a mindset of the business.
Charity's heart, business's mindset, and delivering services that support people. What sorts of services do you deliver then, and to whom?
So we deliver quite a wide variety of different services across the UK, predominantly in England and Wales. And we deliver those particularly public sector services and contracts. And we support a wide range of people. Some of those services include services for people who are coming out of probation, so justice services, education services through alternative provision schools. And we also deliver a large range of support to vulnerable young people, children and families. So we've got quite a wide portfolio of work, Jamie.
And you yourself, Naomi, you're relatively new as the chief exec, but not new to the organisation. Can you talk to us a little bit about your career there?
Absolutely. I've been chief exec at Catch22 now for about 6 months, an opportunity that I feel extremely privileged to be able to undertake. But I've been around in the organisation for about 21 years now. I started my career as a volunteer in homework clubs, actually, in estate-based homework clubs in Elephant and Castle.
Right, yeah.
2000. And I've worked in quite a variety of different organisations, public sector, particularly youth offending teams, youth services, and then really just focused in on delivering services within Catch22, and just pretty much had every single role in the organisation from, you know, volunteer, project worker, coordinator, manager, right up to now, I should say, chief exec. A part of that journey, I also spent quite a lot of time working in our business development function, where I had the opportunity to work with a wide variety of corporate organizations, private sector organizations, to really understand some of the principles of leadership, management, and service design, and systems thinking, strategy, etc. So yeah, I've been around quite a long time, but I definitely feel that this is a fantastic role and a fantastic opportunity. I'm really excited to be here.
Brilliant. How valuable it must be for the organisation to be led by a chief exec who's done pretty much everything there is to do across different roles in the organisation. What insight that must give. You mentioned Catch22 has been around in some form or another for around 200 years. So the organisation has this very long track record of working with people. How has this evolved?
Absolutely great question, Jamie, because, you know, sometimes it's really good to reflect on, you know, where you've come from to know where you're going. And, you know, obviously our previous chief exec would obviously tell the story of the organisation in his own way. And I've had an opportunity to really think about that. And when I've looked back at the history of the organisation and I've lived the history of the organisation, obviously through those roles, what's been really clear to me is always been the kind of combination of the different sectors that exist within the UK coming together to deliver an organisation like Catch22. So, you know, the story is around 200 years ago in 1788, a guy called Frederick Rayner created the Royal Philanthropic Society to deliver support for people who were vulnerable and who were unable to access services and essentially were sitting outside courthouses waiting for support to be provided for them as a result of, you know, being involved in the criminal justice system. And that evolved over the years for the organization, identifying ways to encourage corporate organizations or philanthropists to donate and give money into the organization. So, you know, the Royal Philanthropic Society was the history, and that evolved over the years to become, you know, Catch-22. Some key kind of features of that was the merger of RAINA as an organization, which I believe came around in about the 40s. And Crime Concern in 2008. RAINA was very much a social care-based part of the organization, and Crime Concern very much focused on public safety and community safety. And essentially often competed against each other for the delivery of contracts or grants, etc. And the chairman and the chairwoman of both of those organizations at the time came together and said, you know, rather than competing against each other, why don't we join forces and create a new organization? And that's where Catch-22 came from in 2008. And I think that was quite revolutionary at that time as well, because, you know, we often see in our sector organizations competing against each other to deliver services, when actually they should be doing more to join up and deliver services collectively. Yes. So I think then, yeah, that was quite revolutionary. And then between 2008 and now, the development of the organization really has been focused on, you know, what is our end game? Why are we here? What are we doing? What are we supposed to be achieving as a charitable organization? There's lots of, you know, schools of thought out there that say charities should be aiming to not exist. And, you know, that may potentially be true, but the times and the societies that we live in, and what we've seen continuously throughout history, is that people will always need a level of support at some point in their lives. So why can't organizations like us, you know, be there to deliver that? And because of that, we've had to evolve as an organization to recognize and reflect the fact that charities, social enterprises, social businesses are changing. So we wanted to model ourselves a bit more as a social business, in that we will always deliver services for people who are vulnerable. We'll always aim to build resilience and aspiration in communities, but we want to do that in the most kind of smartest, efficient and economic way. And that's where the kind of a heart of a charity and the mindset of the business has come from. So over the past 10 years, we've been really focusing in on that and focusing on our reform agenda, which really is about encouraging all kinds of organizations, particularly public sector organizations, to continue to evolve, to deliver better services for citizens. So that's been the focus over the past couple of years, Jamie.
Brilliant. Thank you for that. That's really comprehensive. And Naomi, earlier on, you mentioned that in some of your previous roles before taking on the CEO role, you were working in business development. You were working in collaboration with partners to Catch-22, partners in the private sector, for example, corporate partners. I guess that has given you an oversight of different cultures in different types of organization. And I know in the E3M book about mature social enterprise delivering public services, you talk specifically in your essay about organizational culture, and you talk about how social enterprises and many charities, of course, have a real people-centered culture. What do you mean when you talk about a people-centered culture? What does that look like in practice and in practical terms for people who work there?
That's such a great question, Jamie. And I think, you know, the reflection back to the work with a wide variety of different types of organisation really helps set the context in that. So, you know, through working with some of the corporate organisations, for example, you notice that they're very highly driven, performance target-led organisations, a very fast-paced, speed kind of culture. Whereas, you know, my experience in the kind of third sector or the charity sector is that, you know, whilst they deliver great impacts and deliver great work, it's not necessarily always driven or led by a performance related culture. And, you know, wrongly or rightly, those things have added to the culture of organizations historically. But in terms of the unique kind of connection to that is, you know, as an organization, we learned that the richness of the contribution that the knowledge of our individual people can make into the organization is extremely valuable. So a good example is in September last year, 2022, we launched our new strategic plan. And that strategic plan was built up over an 18-month period, which some people might say is quite a long process. But the point of that really was to hear from all of our staff up and down and around the organization what their views are, what they think, what they feel about how the organization should evolve and shape itself over the next 3 years. And by doing that, we not only enabled people to feel like they had a stake in the organization, we received such a rich, wider breadth of comprehensive information to help us inform where the organization should be going. And without doing that exercise, we wouldn't have had that information. The flip side to that is that people now feel included. They feel involved. They feel engaged. They feel like they have a genuine stake. They feel happier in their work. They want to be here. They feel like they're able to express their wishes. And I think when you operate from a leadership perspective without galvanizing that and without connecting that, how can you truly say that your organization is connected to its people? How can you truly say that it's reflective of its people? And how do you actually get the best out of your people if you don't hear from them or you don't understand their context?
So this has the purpose of enabling the organization to fulfill its potential and fulfill its potential for the people that you serve as well, and enabling your people, presumably, to you mentioned feel included, be included, truly included in terms of feel that what they say makes a difference, and presumably reach their potential in the organization as well.
Absolutely. A few years ago, I heard a senior leader in a company refer to her staff. It's actually a public sector organization. I won't name names, but referred to her staff as minions. And like that is so demoralizing to people. And when we look around us to see, you know, why are people not necessarily reaching their potential, they're not performing in the way that we want, or, you know, they're not necessarily coming to the table to express their ideas and their creativity, you know, we have to step back and look at why that is. You know, is that because of the choice of our language? Is that because we don't include them? Is that because we don't engage them, or because we have hierarchies which create a kind of culture of fear? And by doing that, essentially, I feel like our organization would have lost out on so much rich information that we wouldn't have had before. And we wouldn't necessarily have the spirit that we have, I think. So I think it's really important to be intentional about, you know, the culture that you have in your organization, and how as senior leadership, essentially, we really are, you know, not able to fully fulfill our functions and duties without taking that kind of approach.
Yes, absolutely. Can you give us any other tips or insights that organizations can use in terms of how to truly and intentionally engage, involve, support, and develop their people? Things that you found have been working really well.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think, you know, it's not easy, first and foremost. So I would encourage all kind of leaders to, you know, not beat themselves up about this. This is something that I think you need to build up over time and work and continually chip away at and continually work on, so that it becomes the norm and it becomes the culture. But a couple of key things that we've done that I think have really made the difference is we've opened ourselves up on a monthly basis to the wider organization through webinars, to what we call the Chief Officer's Q&A, questions and answers. So, you know, whatever your senior leadership team is in the organization, opening that group up to the wider organization just to take questions and answer questions. So sometimes people put questions in the chat anonymously. Sometimes they just ask us outright. But what it does is it shows people that we're accessible and that we're open to any conversation and we're open to any discussion. And I think that single-handedly has encouraged the workforce to recognize that we want to hear from them. We want to hear their genuine, authentic voices, and that no question is a stupid question or no question is frowned on. And that actually, if they're not that confident, then ask it anonymously and we won't judge you for that. So that was one of the key initiatives we implemented. Another key area, I think, is to get out and be in and around your people. We talk about open door policies and open desk policies. But that for me, you know, has got many caveats to it. Get alongside your people, work alongside them, deliver their services with them. The McAllister Care Review that was launched in the middle of the year indicated that leaders in children's social care should make themselves accessible and available to be working on casework on a day-to-day basis. We do that regularly in Catch-22 by getting out and being in our services. You know, I see many leaders do that. So I'd encourage leaders to actually deliver some of the work still and not just see yourselves as leaders and as executives, but remember that you're practitioners first. And I think the other way is giving back that feedback. So we have now launched something we do on a quarterly basis, which is called a transparency report. And this is not like pages and pages of, you know, this is what we've done, this is what we haven't done. This is just some key highlights about the key actions that we're taking as leaders to respond to the challenges that the organization has proposed to us. So we listen, we hear what the concerns are, and then on a quarterly basis, we respond to the organization and the transparency report, a couple of pages saying what we've done and what we're going to do, and enable the organization to have access to as much of the organization's information as possible.
That's brilliant. I mean, three really specific, practical ideas there. And on the webinar side, I was very interested in the fact that you then said, you know, people can submit questions anonymously if they want to. And then the transparency report at the end there, it sounds like a valuable document. Is it the kind of document where you will say, we're very good at this, and actually we as an organization know that we would like to do this or that better? Is it that honest?
Yeah, so it's got a couple of features to it. One is obviously an update on how we're doing against the strategic plan, so holding ourselves to account. And another kind of feature of it is the kind of you said, we did. Yeah. So we do pulse surveys across the organization. And in some of our services, you know, we work with quite high risk, volatile, vulnerable service users. And the safety is an issue, you know. So people will say to us, you know, we don't always necessarily feel safe. So it's like, okay, well, what are we going to do about that? It's massively important that we address that. So it'll be something like that where we'll say, you said you didn't feel safe and this is what we did. So we use the kind of you said we did approach to do that. And then what tends to happen is after the transparency report is released, we will have a Q&A session with the timing. We have it once a month and then people will ask questions on it. So it's that continuous feedback loop, you know, and people are able to scrutinize, challenge, and ask questions. And as a leader, don't get me wrong, Jamie, it was a bit horrifying getting on, you know, a webinar and having any random question thrown at us as a leadership team. But actually, we got used to it. And now we really enjoy it. And people are really sensible with it. And they use it really, really well. So it is really just making sure you have those continuous loops of enabling people to communicate and then feeding back and not dismissing and discarding what they're saying, or pushing it into a drawer to look at in, you know, 2025 type thing.
Valuable stuff there, Naomi. Thank you. When it comes to working with commissioners, when it comes to working with partners who have commissioned Catch 22 to deliver services, what if you could wave a magic wand and make any sort of behavioural or policy changes in terms of how things happen at the moment for charities and social enterprises that work with public sector partners, you know, what, if anything, would you like to see change?
Such a great question. And I think, you know, there's quite a bit of this in the essay that I wrote. And I think that, you know, just reflecting back on that, really, I think one of the things about the pandemic was fascinating to see how all kinds of organizations were able to adapt and evolve to, you know, a very, very real, like, current issue and that emerging challenge that we faced. And what it really highlighted to me as somebody who's worked in this sector for that long is that actually all of the rigidity that actually exists within the structures of contracting, grants, ways of working, yes, they may be there for particular reasons, but they don't necessarily always have to be. And there's been many examples where, as an organization, we've evolved as a service, or we've created an innovation for a service, or we've done something that we think will enhance the service. And commissioners have essentially said, no, thank you. And we know that by, you know, that evolution, sometimes not even for additional financial requirements, just within the existing service, will make the whole service better and will deliver better outcomes for the people who are using the service. So I think the key really is I'd like commissioners to think about what genuinely are the flexibilities that are available, you know, how they may be acting in a way that's quite rigid, how they potentially are reducing the value that the services that they commission to deliver by not being flexible, by not finding new ways to evolve and deliver the services. And when providers come to you and say that they have a new kind of evolution or an idea or a new way to deliver the service, you know, really listen and get involved and think about ways that you can help move the dial on that rather than revert to the computer says no because of it's something that's always been delivered that way, or because they're perceived to have some kind of regulatory or legal barriers to be able to do that. If those legal and regulatory barriers can be amended and adapted like we saw in the pandemic, then we should be doing that all the time to make sure that the delivery that we're here to do is evolving and is better for our service users. It doesn't make sense that we hide behind some of those things. So I'd like to see more flexibility, more focus on reducing barriers and rigidity to evolution of delivery of services, and commissioners collaborating more with providers on a genuine basis to evolve services, rather than a kind of subservient, you know, we're the commissioner, you're the provider, you'll do what we say.
Absolutely. Brilliant. I mean, that flexibility, so valuable, so valued, recognised as such during the pandemic, needed forever, really, isn't it?
Forever.
Yeah. Naomi, that's been fascinating. I'd love to finish, if I may, by just asking you a point of real interest in terms of one of the many, many ways in which Catch-22 supports young people is through the provision in London of a recording studio, which you were telling me before we started recording this podcast. So what's the studio that you have, and how did that come to pass? How did it come to be?
Such a great story, Jamie. And I think it's very pertinent considering we're recording a podcast today. But there's a fully kind of funded recording studio down in Canning Town that belongs to one of our group organisations, Community Links. So a few years ago, I think just before the pandemic, Community Links received a donation from the Rolling Stones, which obviously is, you know, in itself is like fantastic, but also very prestige in terms of the, you know, Music Hall of Fame. They delivered a concert at the Excel Centre, and they gave the proceeds for the ticket sales to Community Links to develop that state-of-the-art studio. And what we've done is we've not only built the studio there in an old, awesome building, which has got amazing acoustics, we've also built into it a program to support young people to develop the kind of key skills in digital media, digital skills and music production, to enable them to attend and participate in courses which are going to help them move into the workforce. So essentially, it's really like a career development opportunity, and young people participate in our college there. They learn those skills, and then the idea is that they move on to further education training or roles within organizations wherever they have digital media or communications or digital skills based teams. The majority of organizations now, you know, Catch 22, EY, public sector organizations, a lot of them have comms and media teams. So we should be supporting our young people to be able to move into those jobs in the future by giving them the skills that they need to do that. And as part of that, that's where the studio comes in. Alongside having the opportunity to do digital skills, they can also learn to build podcasts and things like that, like what you're doing today. So that's very much part of our digital skills agenda, our youth unemployment agenda, and then also utilizing popular culture and modern tools that young people are interested in to help them secure work for the future.
Lovely. That's a fantastic, wonderful story. And you're so right as well in terms of the vital skills, these vital, useful skills that open new opportunities for many young people as well. Brilliant.
Absolutely. So it's called Links Media College, Jamie. So if anybody wants to check it out, please feel free.
Lovely. Thank you for that. Naomi, is there anything else that you want to tell us in the constraints that we have time-wise about Catch-22, how it delivers services and what you've learned as a leader since taking over as CEO, or what you've learned in terms of in the organisation in your 21-year career there?
That's such a great question, and wow, there's so much to say. But I guess I'd summarise it to say that, you know, as an organisation, we're not just here to continue to deliver the status quo. And I know that that's very much E3M's agenda as well. It's to continue to find ways to evolve what we do, and to also reflect and represent the fact that there are a wide variety of organizations in this country with different structures that are enabled to do that. So, you know, one of the key messages would be, you know, how can we all come together collectively and collaboratively to deliver better services for people who need them? But the particular emphasis on, you know, this is not just about charities or social enterprises or even public sector delivering services. This is about how can corporate sectors be involved, and how can all kinds of organizations that are delivering business, whether that's charitable business or, you know, for-profit business, really look at how they can utilize culture and the culture of their organizations So not just improve the lives of their workforces or the lives of the people they support, but, you know, wider society more generally. But I think we're at a time in our lives where we have to look at, you know, whether business is social, whether social is business, and how we're making sure that all of the things that we do contribute to a better world for all of us, not just from a social perspective, but from an economic perspective and an environment perspective, Jamie. And as leaders in organizations, we have a unique opportunity at this point to be more intentional about our business. And, you know, organizational culture is very much key to that.
It really is. Well, that's been absolutely fascinating, Naomi. Thank you so much for joining us. Where can people find out more about Catch 22?
So there's quite a few places. First thing is you can find us on our website, www.catch22-org.uk. We're on LinkedIn. We are on Twitter. We're on Instagram. And if you go to any of those platforms, you'll also be able to find, you know, who the leaders are of the organization, or any particular part of the organization that you want to know a bit more about or be involved in. We also have our own podcast called Catch 22 Minutes. You can find the link to that on our website and also on our LinkedIn and Instagram pages.
And we will put all these links, including links to the website, links to socials, link to your podcast, in the podcast show notes for this episode as well. So, Naomi Hilston, thanks ever so much for talking with us on the podcast today.
Thank you, Jamie. It's been great. Speak soon.
This is the Vitalizing Purpose podcast with today's guest, Naomi Hilston, Chief Executive of Catch 22, and me, Jamie Veitch. Naomi has contributed a chapter to the new book, Vitalizing Purpose: The Power of the Social Enterprise Difference in Public Services. What's it all about? Well, we depend on public services for a functioning society, but there are record pressures on those services. Resources are stretched, demand is escalating, some services are even at risk of collapse. Traditional approaches are not delivering good outcomes, but we can't just despair at these challenges. We must do better. Vitalizing Purpose investigates how partnerships between public authorities and social enterprises can make a difference to how public services are provided and to people's lives. It's an inspiring, practical book. It's for you and for all custodians of local democracy, and you can get your free copy as an ebook download from e3m.org.uk, or look up Vitalizing Purpose: The Power of the Social Enterprise Difference in Public Services wherever you buy your books. Get your copy today to maximise social value, public benefit and good outcomes for people and places when delivering public services. Thanks for listening.